Serata Mato Kunja Pihari. Thank you. Sat Shishimad, His Divine Grace, Sri Bhakti Vedanta, Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki, Anantakoti Vaishnava Brindiki, Grantaraja Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Jaya Nitai Gopramandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 66, Chapter entitled Pondraka, the False Vasudev, Text Number 10. Iti dutas tam Akshipam Swamine Sarvam Aharat Krishno Pi Ratam Astaya Kashim Upajagam Upajagama Iti dutastam akshepam Swamine sarvam aharat Krishno pi ratam astaya Kashim upajagamaha Iti dutastam akshepam Swamine sarvam aharat Krishno pi ratam astaya Kashim upajagamaha Iti dutastam akshepam Swamine sarvam aharat Krishno pi ratam astaya Kashim upajagamaha
Iti dutastam
Iti.
Thus addressed.
Duta. The messenger.
Tam.
Those.
Akshepam.
Insults. Swamine.
To his master.
Sarvam.
Entire.
Aharat.
Carried.
Krishna.
Lord Krishna.
Api.
And.
Ratam.
His chariot.
Astaya.
Riding.
Kashim.
To Varanasi.
Upajagamaha.
Went near. Translation and purports by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. When the Lord had thus spoken, the messenger conveyed his insulting reply to his master in its entirety. Lord Krishna then mounted his chariot and went to the vicinity of Kashi. Translation responsibly. When the Lord had thus spoken, the messenger conveyed his insulting reply to his master in its entirety.
Lord Krishna then mounted his chariot and went to the vicinity of Kashi.
Purport. In Krishna, Srila Prabhupada describes this incident as follows. The messenger carried the words of Lord Krishna to his master, Pundraka, who patiently heard all these insults. Without waiting any longer, Lord Sri Krishna immediately started out in his chariot to punish the rascal Pundraka, because at that time the king of Karusha, Pundraka, was living with his friend, the king of Kashi. Krishna surrounded the whole city of Kashi. Text 11. Upon observing Lord Krishna's preparations for battle, the mighty warrior Pundraka quickly went out of the city with two full military divisions. Text 12 to 14. Pondraka's friend, the king of Kashi, followed behind, O king, leading the rear guard with three Akshahini divisions. Lord Krishna saw the Pondraka was carrying the Lord's own insignia, such as the conch shell, disc, sword, and club, and also an imitation Shangabo and Sri Vatsamak. He wore a mock Kostuba gem, was decorated with a garland of forest flowers, and was dressed in upper and lower garments of fine yellow silk. His banner bore the image of Garuda, and he wore a valuable crown and gleaming, sharp-shaped earrings. Srila Prabhupada comments in Krishna, when the two kings came before Lord Krishna to oppose him, Krishna saw Pundraka face to face for the first time. Text 15. Lord Hari laughed heartily when he saw how the king had dressed up in exact imitation of his own appearance, just like an actor on a stage. Purport. Srila Prabhupada describes the scene as follows. On the whole, Pondraka's dress and makeup were clearly imitation. Anyone could understand that he was just like someone on a stage playing the part of Vasudev in false dress. When Lord Sri Krishna saw Pondraka imitating his posture and dress, he could not check his laughter, and thus he laughed with great satisfaction. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that it was a benediction from Lord Shiva that enabled Pondraka to imitate the Lord's dress and appearance exactly, a fact gleaned from the Uttarakhanda of Sri Padma Purana. Amagyan Timurandasya Genanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam. Pancha kalpata rubyascha kripa sindupya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishna vebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Krishna has different moods, just like all of us have different moods. Sometimes we're sober, sometimes we're jovial, sometimes we are chivalrous, sometimes we are, what's Krishna's other mood? Playful, like that. Different moods. So Krishna has, is described by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion. Krishna has four moods: Dhira Datta, Dhira Lalita, Dhira Prashanta, and Dhira Datta. So these four different moods, Krishna, Dhira Prashanta means Krishna is sometimes like very peaceful. Prashanta. Shanti means peaceful. Like that. So Krishna is sometimes in that mood. He is Dhira Prashanta, which means sometimes very peaceful, very placid, just like sometimes we are like that. Sometimes very peaceful, very placid, in that kind of a mood. Krishna is in that mood, sometimes. That's one of his four characteristics or moods. And then he has another mood called Dhira Datta. Dhira Datta means there's two, there's one Dhira Datta and one Dhira Datta. Like that. So one of them means that Krishna is chivalrous. Chivalrous means that he gets into this fighting spirit. He gets into this spirit where he becomes very audacious. And he will insult his enemy. He will get into this mood of being like a kshatriya. And he will speak very powerful like that. It is said that Bhimasen, who is one of Krishna's eternal associates, one of the Pandavas, he is in this mood of being Dhira Datta, that he is very like audacious, powerful personality. If you insult him, he will be very vindictive in his return. So Krishna is showing this mood in this pastime. This is one of Krishna's moods, how he becomes like. And then another mood is the Dhira Datta, where Krishna is very chivalrous, but like in the mood of like Lord Ramachandra, very noble and very showing all good qualities, like a perfect king, like that. Ramachandra is always in this mood. Lord Ramachandra is in that ideal mood of human behavior, like that. Very noble, very perfect, very compassionate, showing all these good qualities. So Krishna sometimes he shows this mood. And then his fourth characteristic is Dhira Lalita. Lalita means like playful. So he is in this mood of being very playful. And you'll see in his Vrindavan pastimes, when he's young, in his Kaishora age, when Krishna is in his like teenage years, he's in this mood of being very playful. Just like when we're teenagers, generally we're very playful. We don't take anything very seriously. Doesn't matter what we're doing and what's going on, we're always joking around and playing around. I remember when I was a teenager with my friends, you know, we could be in any situation, we're always joking around and playing around, and even when we're supposed to be serious, and you know, always something was going on. So Krishna is in that mood. This is Dhira Lalita. In Vrindavan, he's primarily in this mood. He's always in a playful, joking kind of mood, just very relaxed, very joyful like mood. When he goes to Dwarka, then he shows more the Dhira Datta, where he becomes more like, you know, shows all the good. He's like that in Vrindavan also, but he becomes more like that, like a king. And his Prashanta mood, he shows at different times, being peaceful. But this Dhira Datta, when he becomes very, like, very, what's the words?
Haughty.
He becomes very haughty and very, any other words we can think of?
Fired up.
He becomes very
aggressive.
Yeah, he becomes like aggressive, like vindictive, like that. He takes this move. He doesn't take it very often, but if someone insults him or insults his devotees, if someone incites his chivalrous rust, he will enter into this mood very powerfully. So we see in this pastime, he enters into this mood. Right? He's taken on this mood of being like Dhiradatta, very aggressive and vindictive. So this pastime is quite humorous, both for Krishna and for Krishna's devotees. No? Because in this pastime, Pondraka has claimed to be Krishna. Like that. He has claimed that I am Krishna. So he takes on all the ornaments or all the marks of Krishna, all the features of Krishna. So this is very humorous. Krishna travels all the way down to Kashi, from Dwarka, travels all the way down to Kashi just to see it. You can imagine someone sending you a letter in the mail and saying, I've become you. You are not the real you. I am the real you. And if you don't believe I am the real you, then you come and see me and I will prove I am the real you. And the real one of us will live. I will kill you. And then I will be you. I, who am you, will be you. So if someone said this to you, if someone sent a letter to you, then you would dial 000 and say to the emergency service, do you have a special service where you pick up crazy people? Like that, please get this person. Like that. They need a straight jacket, a white jacket. Please take them away and hopefully we will not see that person again. Because this person has lost his sanity. So that's how Krishna observed this entire incident. This person wrote to Krishna and said, I am you. Not only am I you, I'm better than you. You are not the real you. You are the imposter. I am the real Vasudeva. I am the one who is mentioned in the scriptures. I am the incarnation for this age. Right? And I am the incarnation of this age and you are the imposter, you should come here and I will destroy you and prove who is the real incarnation for this age. So Krishna read this one out, or he didn't read it out, but it was read out before the entire assembly of the Yadu dynasty in the Sudama assembly house in Dwarka. So obviously it was very entertaining for the Yadu dynasty when they heard this one. Now this is audacious, to say I am God. I mean, everyone thinks it. We all think it every day. That's our problem. We think we are God. But to go so far as to send a letter to God saying that I am God and, I am more God than you. I have all the features of God. Please come and we will fight and we'll work it out. Who is the actual God? Someone's in this kind of consciousness. What do we call it? What is this consciousness called?
Mayavadi.
It's called Mayavadi? Yeah. I was thinking just the first part of the word. It is Maya. It is illusion. Right? If you actually think you are God, then you are in illusion. So Pondraka, he sent this message to Krishna. So then Krishna got into this mood of being Dhiradatta. It means he became very aggressive and vindictive. And he says to him, yes, I will come there. And I will, he sends a message back to him and he says, you are a frog. If you call someone a frog, it's generally quite an insult. Usually we don't try to flatter someone by calling them a frog. Right? My dear frog. So he calls Pondraka a frog. He says, my dear frog. He said, there is a black snake called Krishna who is going to come very soon and go down into the hole and devour you. So you better run and hide, right? You frog. Like that. Krishna. Normally, if you talk to someone like that, then usually it's okay, let's step outside. You're trying to incite their anger. So Krishna gets into this mood. Why does Krishna get into this mood? Why is he doing like this? Why would he speak like that? Sometimes people cannot understand Krishna. Lots of people cannot understand Krishna. They can't understand the way he behaves. Why would he go off and dance with gopis, women, in the middle of the night? Right? We're taught to practice brahmacharya. We're taught to segregate the sexes. Right? The Mataji sit on one side of the room, we sit on the other side of the room, men sit on the other side of the room. Segregation of the sexes. Right? So we're meant to practice celibacy. We're meant to practice spiritual life, meant to be focused on something serious. And yet Krishna runs off and dances with women in the middle of the night. Very confusing for people. Not even moral. Okay, go and dance with your wife in the middle of the night, but not the wives of other people. Now that's not even moral. So people, it's very difficult for people to understand Krishna. Many things Krishna does, very difficult to understand. So he also does this. He also speaks in a very audacious kind of mood. It's difficult for people to understand. How could God, if this is God, how could he speak like this? You know, you frog. You know, why don't you just come here, right? And this black snake will devour you. And people, this is not God. You know, God should be saying, you know, or God should be saying, you know, shanti, shanti, shanti. You know, if he's God, he has to wobble his head a little bit and just go. That's God. You can't be very aggressive like that. This is not, they would not expect this to be natural. They're not expecting this to be godly like that. So why does Krishna do it? Krishna does it because he is Purna. What does Purna mean? Complete. Krishna is Purna. He is complete. Everything is in Krishna. Everything is in Krishna. Right? If everything is not in Krishna, he's not complete. Right? So this desire to fight, right, to have battle or have a contest, it's in Krishna. It's in God. Otherwise, why is it in us? Right? I remember when we were at school, whenever a fight would break out in the schoolyard, the whole school would just run. I remember primary school, like 300 kids just suddenly run. There's nothing else that could happen in the school during lunchtime that would make 300 kids run to one spot. But if a fight broke out, 300 kids just ran, you know, go, get him, get him. I remember one of our teachers used to let, some, most of our teachers used to run in and stop the fight, but there's one teacher who used to just let it go. She just let it finish, you know, like that. Because she thought, you know, let him get it out of their system. Yeah, as long as they don't hurt each other too much. Let him get them out of their system and then they'll cry and they'll, you know, go all silly and then it'll all be finished. So, there is something in it. There is a rasa in it, right? There is like a pleasure in it, right? So, Krishna, he cannot get this pleasure in the spiritual world, right? There's no chivalrous rasa on this level in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, there is some chivalry. There is some mood of competition between Krishna and the devotees, just like in Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna and the cowherd boys, they compete with each other. They have wrestling matches every day in the pasturing fields. Right? It says in the Krishna book that Balaram takes one side, right, and Krishna and the cowherd boys take the other side. Right, and then there's a big fight, like wrestling match. Everyone comes in, they all wrestle, and good fun. You know, we do it all the time. We do it when we're kids. We even do it now sometimes. You know, we wrestle around, we have fun. But we don't get serious. You know, we don't in the middle of it just start, you know, like punching the guy, like bang, 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 you know. Like, it doesn't become serious. It's just fun, just pleasure. So in the spiritual world, there's no, you know, Krishna doesn't get really aggressive with his friends. His friends don't get aggressive with him. It's just playing. And then whoever wins, if sometimes Krishna's side loses, then Krishna and all of his friends, they have to carry Balaram and all of their friends on their shoulders, right? Because they've lost the wrestling match. So they have to carry him around and Balaram's up on everyone's shoulders. Yes, you know, we are the actual warriors. You know, who are you guys? Right? You think you're strong. Right? So they enjoy it. There's some fun there. It's rasa, right? Chivalrous rasa. But it's not serious. But Krishna has that desire to have a serious fight. There is some pleasure in having a serious fight, right? Fighting to the death, right? Has anyone ever been in that kind of a fight? We have to fight to the death, right? Mataji, have you ever been in that kind of a with your husbands? So, sometimes, like, I've never been in that. I've never been in the fight where you've had to fight to the death. But I remember last year, we were in Vrindavan, and it was at the end of, after Kartik, near the end of Kartik, at the end of Kartik, the devotees of Kazakhstan in southern Russia, then the temple was attacked by the government. And the devotees, the government came in with, what do you call them, bulldozers, you know, and smashed some of the devotees' buildings and tried to take back our property, and like demoniac, like full Kali Yuga demoniac principle, to attack Vaishnavas and Brahmanas who are trying to live peaceful. Why? And it was snowing at the time. Like it was snow everywhere, and they just came and pulled up. Where are the devotees supposed to go? Not even humane. You know, I mean, where are the devotees supposed to go when it's like 5 foot of snow everywhere? Where they're supposed to go? It's just demoniac consciousness. So we protested. The devotees from Vrindavan, from Delhi, from all around, we all came to Delhi, and we all marched to the Kazakhstan embassy and protested. So I was there, and the devotees who were organizing the protest, about 600 of us, maybe more, I can't remember, 600 devotees. So they had, you know, megaphones, and they said, okay, we're going to be very orderly. You know, don't riot, don't smash everything up, and just be very orderly. So we're all going, and everyone's chanting slogans. You know, we're all chanting. I didn't even know what they were saying. Because it was all in Hindi, so I didn't know. But, you know, everyone punched their fist in the air. Yeah, we all go, and then they'd say something. How do they say it? You know, when they have things in India, they protest. They say the same thing every time. How do they say? Yeah, and then everyone goes, ah. Yeah. So we're all going down the road, we're all going, ah. Like, I didn't know what we're saying, but, you know, everyone was getting into it. It's like the rustle was there. You could feel like the mood building up. Because devotees were angry, right? So they made a police barricade to stop us from getting all the way to the embassy. Like, it was only... The police were in control, but they were just, it was like a show thing, because they had to show some disciplines I didn't get out of control, but actually they weren't trying to fully control us. But they made a barricade. So we got to the barricade, and the devotees got a bit fired up, so then they pushed the barricades over, and then the mood started. And then you could feel the mood of like, okay, let's smash the embassy and kill the Kazakhstan, you know, the ambassador. Let's get him and burn him or something. Like, you could feel the mood was coming. Seriously, the mood was coming. And we were all starting to get... You know, and then devotees started getting worked up. And by the time we got to the embassy, like, we were worked up. Like, that was it. And you could feel, like, I mean, we didn't actually get to the fight, but you could feel the rasa, the pleasure. And you felt like, let's die. You know, if we die, like, it's a battle now. Right? And that's what it was like on Kurukshetra. If you die, you go to Swaga. If you live, you rule the earth. So either way, what's the problem? So that's what the chatras get into, that mood. And then there's a rasa at that point. There's a pleasure at that point. Let's just fight for Krishna. If we die for Krishna, let us die for Krishna. Right? And that was the mood. And like, we're getting right into that mood, so it was nice, you know. So we're getting there. But then they spent like, they sent like the, what's the Indian special force? Gurkhas or?
Cats.
Is it? Cats? Like that? So they sent like the really... top guys, you know, with the machine guns, and they were in front of the embassy. And like these guys, you could tell they're like SAS. Like there was not going to be any mucking around. It was like, you know, if we tried to go through then it was going to be on. So, but the head chief policeman, you can see he was very calm. He wasn't freaked out by the devotees. I mean, India, they have riots every second day. There's a protest every second day, so they know how to deal with it. So at the end of it, when they wanted to calm everyone down, they sent a female police officer in. And the female police officer came in amongst all the men. And she said, everyone please calm down. And everyone just calmed down. And everyone sat down. And we had a nice protest. We just kept shouting and like that. So this is a rasa. So that's why Krishna, because he is purna, he is complete. He is, everything is within him. That's why he comes to the material world to have these fights with the demons. That's why if you read in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, that's why he himself arranged for the four Kumaras to curse Jai and Vijay. Right? That whole pastime was the Lord's arrangement. Because normally, devotees don't curse devotees. You know, sometimes we get upset with the devotees. You know, like, you know, you might be at breakfast and, you know, one devotee takes the last piece of avocado and, you know, you get upset. But you don't curse them. You know, you will become a frog. You will become a... avocado tree, right? We don't curse like that devotee. We don't curse other devotees. We might get upset with other devotees, but we don't get to that point of cursing. So when the Kumaras and Jai and Vijay, you know, there was cursing going on and everything, that was the Lord's arrangement. That was Yogamaya. He created that pastime because he wanted to come to the material world and he wanted to have a fight, and he wanted Jai and Vijay to give him the fight because there was no one in the material world who could give him a decent battle. So he wanted Giant Vijay to go there, take demoniac forms as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, and then fight with him. That was the whole Leela. So the Lord is Purna, he has this desire to fight. That's why it's there. So in this pastime, Krishna gets into it. Pondraka becomes aggressive towards Krishna, so then Krishna takes on the mood, right? And he goes down to Kashi, where Pondraka is staying, and then he surrounds the city with his army. Right? Big battle. You can imagine what it would be like. I mean, to get into a war. You know, I mean, imagine, you know, if we could get into Kurukshetra, or we get into, you know, Lord Ram's war at Lanka. They're the two great battles in history. Imagine if we could get into them, you know, armor up, right, and get into the fight. I mean, it would be ecstatic. You know, Krishna's there in the chariot, and, like, you know, let's die for Krishna, let's fight for Krishna. It would be ecstatic, right? So Krishna's gone there with an entire army. They've surrounded the city, and then the king of Kashi and Pondraka have come out, right, with an army, and it's going to be a battle. Like, it's a huge scene, you know. And Krishna, you know, he's looking, where is he, where's Pondraka, where is me, where am I, you know. So then he sees Pondraka comes out, and then Krishna sees him, Krishna just laughs. He says, this is ridiculous. It's like someone acting as you, right, someone putting on all your clothes and, you know, your glasses and your clothes and your everything, and then, you know, talking like you and acting like you and walking around like you. You just laugh. You just say, who's this guy? You know? He doesn't even look like me. And he's talking like me. Like that. So Pondraka comes out, you know, puts a bit of Sri Vatsa on his chest. Krishna has a little white tuft of hair on his chest called Sri Vatsa. So he puts a little bit of white, you know, gets some, you know, blue tack or something, and puts some on his chest, gets a Kaustubha Mani, right, the jewel that only Krishna wears, right, the most valuable jewel in creation, called Kaustubha Mani. You know, he wears that. Krishna has another jewel as well, which is mentioned, called the Moon Locket. Krishna is the only one who has this one as well. The Moon Locket is made out of congealed moonbeams. At night time, Krishna goes out to dance with the gopis and so forth, and the jewel melts and enters back into the moonbeams. And then at daytime, when Krishna goes at the end of the night, when Krishna goes back after dancing with the gopis and he takes rest, pretends to take rest, and then when he gets up during the day, then the moon locket, the moonbeams enter into the moon locket, and they congeal, they become solid. And then during the day, Krishna has this moon locket on, which has like moonshine coming out of it. Right? Pretty far out. This is our God. Right? Our God is not a cheap God. Like that. People say, oh, how can he be God? Yes, he can be God. Right? You find a jewel that does that. Right? That's our God. Our God doesn't wear diamonds and rubies. He does wear diamonds and rubies, but, you know, people say, oh, you know, the Queen of England, you know, as an example, you know, has tiaras made of solid diamonds, you know, which they stole from all the temples in India. Right, so she's supposed to be opulent and everything like that. Nothing compared to Krishna. Nothing. No one can compare to Krishna. Yeah, you find a jewel which is made from moonbeams. Right, with solid moonbeams, which during the day glows like moonshine. It's Krishna. And Kaustubha Mani is even more opulent. I don't know much about Kaustubha Mani, but his original jewel, his most valuable jewel, the Kaustubha, which he always wears, that's the most valuable jewel in creation. And even more valuable than the Sharmantaka jewel, right, which used to produce gold and everything. Kaustubha Mani is even more valuable than that. And Pondraka rides out of Kashi wearing, you know, some imitation jewel, you know, some bit of hair on his chest, right? Two extra arms pinned on the side. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You've got to be in illusion to do something like this, right? Now, the reason Pondraka is doing that is because everyone in the material world thinks they are God. That's why we're in the material world. Right? And that's why we can't get out of the material world, because we all think deep down psychologically within the depths of our consciousness, right? We think we are God. So therefore, as long as you are thinking like that, you cannot transcend into the spiritual world, right? You will remain trapped within this material world. So Pondraka had this consciousness, and Krishna saw it, and he just laughed. He thought, "This is ridiculous," right? So he reciprocated with him, right? Krishna will reciprocate with everyone. Yeyata mam prapajante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. As you surrender to me, I will reward you accordingly. So if you come to Krishna, right, in a very humble, submissive, servile mood, then Krishna reciprocates like that. He'll reciprocate as your master. But if you come to him, right, if you walk into the temple one morning dressed up as him with two extra arms, right, on Janmashtami, right, you walk into the temple, Janmashtami, Mangaladi, all the devotees there, and you dress up as Krishna with two extra arms, and everyone's looking at you thinking, this is not appropriate, Prabhu. You know, this is not good. Right? But if you come like that, then he'll reciprocate like that. What did he do to Pondraka? Cut his head off. Right? Cut the head off and threw it back into the city. Right? This is Krishna when he gets in this mood, you know. Cut his head off and throw it back into the city. Right? And then the head landed in the city, and then everyone came over. What is that? What is that? My God. Pondraka's head. Right? So, if we continue to think we are God, Krishna will deal with us somewhat like this. Right? It means you will be chastised. You will be humbled. What is the consciousness of thinking I am God? Krishna describes in chapter 16 of the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Ishwaraham aham bhogi, siddhoham balavan sukhi. Right? This is, Krishna says, 16th chapter of Gita is called divine and demoniac natures, right? In such a yuga, it is said, the demons and the demigods, the suras and the asuras, or the divine and the demoniac personalities, lived on different planets, right? You'll see in the Bhagavatam, there was, when they wanted to attack a planet, the demons would come from another planet to attack the demigods. They're on different planets in such a yuga. In Treta Yuga, they're on the same planet but in different countries. Just like you see in the Battle of Lanka, the demons were living in Lanka across the ocean, and devotees were living in Bharatvarsh, right? So they're in different countries. So when they wanted to fight, they would have to cross the ocean. Then in Dwapara Yuga, the demons and the devotees lived in different families, right? The Pandavas and the Kauravas, like that. Demons in one family, devotees in another family. But in Kali Yuga, the demons and the devotees live in the same body. Right, we have a schizophrenic nature. Sometimes we wake up in the morning and we're a devotee, and other mornings we wake up and we're a asura, like that. Some mornings we wake up and we're just not very. It's sad. Right? It's not good. Some mornings we wake up and we're just not submissive to Krishna. We want to enjoy separately from Krishna. Other mornings we wake up and we're very submissive. Krishna, I'll do whatever you want. Almost. That's our good days. But the bad days, they're not good. They're not good. So, this is the nature of everyone in the material world. Now, what is demoniac consciousness? Krishna says in the 16th chapter of the Gita, Ishwaroham, aham bhogi. This is false ego. This is what false ego is defined as, and this is what the demoniac consciousness in the material world is. Ishwara, I am the controller, right? I must control. I must have control. If I do not have control, then I will not serve Krishna, right? Even devotees, we become mixed in our devotional service. I will serve Krishna, but I must have control. Right? If I don't have control, then I'm not enthusiastic to serve. I'll serve Krishna even very enthusiastically, but I must have control. So this is not pure devotional service. This is false ego. And Krishna, because he wants to encourage us, just like the father deals with the small child, in the beginning the father just lets the child grow up, he doesn't put so much restriction on the child. So Krishna will let you go for a number of years, you know, with this mood of, I will serve you, but I need control. And then when you get a bit older as a devotee, a bit more mature as a devotee, a bit more advanced and purified, then he will start coming in, you know, with the disc and the club. And then he'll begin to whittle you down. Right? And what he'll do in due course is that he'll take away the control. Some point in time, he'll just take it away from you. And then that'll be the test. Are you serious or not? Do you want me or not? What are you here for? Are you here to serve me? Or are you just going to keep getting involved in your false ego for lifetime after lifetime after lifetime? You want to come back again to be the controller? Or do you want to give it up now and surrender to me fully? So Krishna will test us. Ishwara aham, aham, bogi. What is the bogi?
Enjoyer.
I am the enjoyer. That's why we're in the material world, because I am the enjoyer. Huh? What is the boga? Yeah, the boga is the offering. Right? When we offer it to Krishna, we offer him the boga. Krishna gives us back the prasad. Right? So we offer the boga to Krishna. But in the material world, we think we are bogi. We think the boga is meant for us. Right? We are the enjoyers. It is meant for our pleasure. Quickly, Prabhu, do the offering. Quickly, I'm hungry. Right? Or the offering. Oh no, I'm not allowed to do the offering. Yeah. Oh, it looks good. No. Well, that's not the mood. The mood is meant to be for Krishna's pleasure. It is for Krishna's pleasure. Everything is meant for Krishna. Everything is meant for his pleasure. Now, what is the spirit of enjoyment, or what is the sign or insignia of enjoyment? What is the main thing we want to enjoy in this material world?
Sex.
Sex, yeah. Subtle and gross sex. Right? That is the main principle of enjoyment which traps everyone in the material world. Right? Subtle sex life means I want to dominate the opposite sex. I want to bring them under my control. Right? To enjoy controlling the opposite sex. And gross sex life means to enjoy gross sex life. That's what binds everyone in the material world. That is the main potency of mind which keeps us on the material world. So that's what keeps us in the material world lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. You get so attached to a particular partner in this lifetime, in your next lifetime you'll have no remembrance of that partner whatsoever. They'll be gone. You know, people in this life, like, you know, Romeo and Juliet, they killed each other. Sorry. They killed themselves for each other. That's what people do. That's considered to be like the pinnacle of material existence. I will die for my lover. Right? I will die for her. Right? She will die for me. Right? That's like the pinnacle of material existence. Right? But in your next lifetime, after you leave this body, you won't even know who she is. In fact, you'll be wearing a dress. You know, you're so attached to this girl, so attached to this girl. Oh, I will die for this girl. Next lifetime, you'll be a girl. Yeah, and then what? Now you're going to be attached to a man. Right? If someone showed you now, your husband in the next life, if you're a man now, and then you become a girl, and shows you your husband in this life, if you see it now in this life, right? You'll think, no way I'm going to touch. Right? I'm not going to have anything to do with that. Yeah, I hate moustaches. Right? But in the next lifetime, then Maya is so powerful you become fully attached. And then if someone brings you the girl that you're attached to in the previous lifetime and then shows you now in your girl body, you'll say, okay, she's a nice girl, but I'm not going to marry her. Right? So this is the feature of Maya. That's how we get trapped in the material world again and again and again. Subtle and gross sex life. So I am the bogi, I am the enjoyer. But then Prabhupada says, what should be our mood when we look at the opposite sex?
Krishna.
What should be our consciousness or mood?
For Krishna's pleasure.
For Krishna's pleasure, yeah. Krishna said, or Prabhupada says, that for the men, when they look at the women, they should say, these are Krishna's
gopis.
The gopis are not meant for my enjoyment. They're meant for Krishna's enjoying. So we should see all women as mother. Like that, as mother. Right? It means there should be respect. Not that they're meant for my enjoyment, but I'm meant to give them respect. That is the mood. Right? If you have this mood that they're meant for my enjoyment, just like imagine, sometimes we think, why can't I go back to Godhead? I'm sick of this material world. Right? I got fried yesterday. Right? I got fried yesterday. Right? Day before I was fine. I liked being here. But yesterday I got fried. And now I want to get out of the material world. So, okay, you have your fried day. Fried Friday. Right? And Krishna says, okay, this is just hypothetical. Krishna says, okay, come back to Goloka Vrindavan. You're fried. You're over the material world. Right? So you come back to the Goloka Vrindavan and you get your gopi form and you enter back into the Rasa Lila pastime. And then Krishna's dancing with all the gopis, right? And then your eyes are popping out of your head. Wow, look at all these beautiful women. Wow, like that. And Krishna just looks at you and says, okay, go back. You know, you have to get this out of your system. If you want to stay in the, if you want to go to the spiritual world, you have to get that out of your system. As long as you want to be the bhogi or the enjoyer, you have to stay in the material world. Like that. So, how do we purify our consciousness? How do we get rid of this enjoying spirit? Everything has to be offered to Krishna. Right? And we only take prasad. We don't take the bhoga. That's the point. That's why devotees have to be very strict. Everything must be offered to Krishna. Everything must be offered to Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sava Daman Parichyaja. Right? Sava means everything. Give up everything. Mam ekam ekka sharana braja. Only me. Right? It says in the Bible, God is a jealous God. He won't tolerate anyone else. Krishna demands you can only think of one person, me. Everything must be for my pleasure. And that's how the spiritual world works. Everyone is thinking like that. Everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. And the description in the third canto of the spiritual world is it is completely harmonious. Right? There is no disharmony there. Everything is harmonious because everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. We have to learn that gradually. Give more and more to Krishna. Year after year after year as a devotee. Learn to offer more to Krishna. Learn to offer more of our heart to Krishna. Become purified. Otherwise, we'll stay in this material world and we'll be like Pondraka. Maybe we don't dress up like God. Yeah, maybe we don't walk into the temple dressed up as God. But sometimes we walk around the temple as if we are God. Yeah, we walk around the temple. Sometimes hard to get the false ego through the temple room door. You have to imagine that when you walk into the temple room, there's a sign on the door, please leave your false ego outside. When you come before Krishna, you must be very humble. I am your servant, I am your servant, I am your servant. That's all. When you go back out, it's up to you if you want to pick up your false ego or not. But if you leave it out there, then Jit will come along and throw it in the dump master. That is our desire. That one day the false ego goes into the dump master, goes down to the tip, and never comes back. We don't want to be Pondrakas. We don't want to keep walking around for lifetimes thinking we are God. We're not God's competitor. Prabhupada actually says in the Upanishad, Prabhupada says Krishna does not want to dominate us. Krishna's not this domineering personality. You know, some people become control freaks. You know, I've got you under control and you've got to do what I want you to do and you're not going to get out of it, you know. Krishna's not like that. Prabhupada says Krishna just wants cooperation. And that's how devotees are. When devotees are advanced and purified, like you see advanced devotees when they associate together, very sweet mood. Yeah, not that everyone's trying to dominate each other else, but everyone's in the mood of servant, and just a very sweet mood. Right? It's voluntary giving of affection. Affection must be given voluntarily. It's not that everyone's trying to control everyone. You must serve me. No, everyone automatically wants to give that affection to everyone else. That's what the spiritual world is like. But we can only get back into the spiritual world when we develop this consciousness of being not the enjoyer and not the controller. Like that. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Says that in the Bible also. Not that. It's more difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God than it is to thread a camel through the eye of a needle. Yeah, like a needle has that little hole there. It's harder for a rich, it says in the Bible, it's harder for a rich man to go into heaven, into the kingdom of God. It's easy to put a camel through the eye of a needle. It's easier. Because if you're, in other words, if you have material attachments, you can't get in. Any other question or comment?
Our spiritual world starts from here. From, like, Krishna is saying to Arjuna that if you win this battle, you will enjoy the earthly kingdom. Arjuna is he's also telling that you should not be attached with your desires. Just do it for me. So that means Krishna is trying to make him feel that spiritual world is starting from here only, from the earthly kingdom.
No, when Krishna says that, that's in the second chapter. If you look at the, if you study the Gita in the second chapter between verses 31 and 38, then Krishna is speaking on the Karma Kanda level. He's arguing, he's trying to convince Arjuna on the level of Karma Kanda, right? If you win the battle, you will enjoy earth. If you lose the battle, you'll go to Swarga. Devotees aren't interested in that, right? This is just Krishna speaking on that level, because he wants to attract everyone into Krishna consciousness. Krishna says there are four people who come to me. One of them is the people who have material desires. They want wealth, arta, right? So Krishna wants to attract them also. So he says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, if you do something for me and you don't succeed, then you'll go to Swarga, like that. So people think, oh, very good, let me serve Krishna. But that's not Krishna's final message. In the Bhagavad Gita, at the end of the Gita, he just wipes out everything else. At the end of the Gita, he says, forget everything I said. Just surrender to me.
Krishna, are you saying that the challenge is to give our hearts to Krishna? What are the difficulties? What are the obstacles in the way of giving our hearts? I mean, can you talk a little bit about the dynamic of fear?
Nature of everyone in the material world is that we've been disappointed and hurt many, many times. So when people become very disappointed, I mean, my spiritual master said just before he left this world, he said that if people have not been loved in their childhood, then it is more difficult for them to surrender to Krishna. Because if people have been hurt during their life, in their childhood or as adults, if they've been hurt, then the heart becomes hard. We put up defenses. And it's harder for us to trust Krishna. So that's why it is very important for devotees to treat each other very nicely and properly, respectfully, and even more than that, with love and affection. Because if we can develop that kind of ethos or that kind of mood, then devotees will feel secure. Just like when we went to the men's retreat with Burajan Prabhu. That's what Burajan Prabhu, that was one of his main things he was trying to do. He's trying to create that mood where everyone felt safe. Because normally we feel like, oh, you know, I can't reveal myself and like that. But he created a very safe mood, and by the end of the retreat, devotees were revealing very intimate things about themselves, about how difficult it was for them to surrender to Krishna. So if we can create that mood within the society of ISKCON, then it'll be easier for devotees to love and surrender to Krishna. And devotees have to learn to trust. That's one of the great things which is lost in Kali Yuga. People don't trust and they don't love. They don't have faith like that. So we have to re-establish that principle, because if people haven't got that, then it's difficult for them to surrender to Krishna. You know, psychologically, if people have got so many barriers, then when they come to Krishna, who is the original person, they find it difficult to deal with people. They come to the original person, They have so much psychological stuff they have to overcome to approach him. Like that.
Yeah, that very understanding as you've reflected it has been so that they haven't handled for a long time in Jesus.
Hasn't
it? Badly handled.
Yeah, because you know, if you look at devotees, it's like if you're in a mental asylum and who are the doctors? Right, the doctors are supposed to be the people who treat everyone they're sane. But you'll see in the material world, the devotees are just coming from the insane side. They're coming from the side of the patient. So then suddenly the patients become doctors. So it means when the patients become doctors, the doctors, they don't automatically become normal. It takes them time to cure their own disease. But there are many devotees in our movement. There are many devotees who are good doctors. They've overcome a lot of the problems which people go through. So you have to take shelter of them. And the point is that sometimes devotees say, well, ISKCON's like that, ISKCON's like that. ISKCON's only going to change if we make a change. So we have to make a change. We could have a defeatist mentality and we could say, oh, ISKCON's like this, let's leave. No, let's make ISKCON what it should be. If we see it's not something, then let's make it what it should be. Just like devotees used to come to Prabhupada and they used to complain about another devotee. And what would Prabhupada say? Devotee would come to Prabhupada and say, oh, that devotee's not doing his service properly. Then what would Prabhupada say? What's that? Yeah, maybe he said that too. He might have said that. He did say that. That's true. But as Prabhupada said, then you do better. Right? Don't sit there and just criticize this guy. Oh, he did that and he did that and he did that. No, you do better. You show the example. Otherwise, how does this kind of change?
That would be my next question. Practically.
There's only one person in this world who you can change. Right? There's only one person you can change. Right? And that's you. So what we all have to do is become the kind of devotees that we know we should be. We should focus on the example of our guru or our gurus, and we should strive to be like that. And then if we become purified in consciousness, then we can affect others' lives. You can't force someone. You can't say, oh, you have to be humble or like that. You show the example and then they will follow you. Like that. ISKCON's not so bad. It's not so bad. It's not so bad. You know, I mean, okay, there's some problems there. But like, you know, I've been in the movement for a number of years. And, you know, I know all the problems as much as anyone. I've heard them all. I've seen them all. I've been through them all. Yeah, and then some people just get caught up in their whole lives on the internet just talking about all the problems. With all due respect, who really cares? I really don't care. Like, you know, if there are problems, but there's so many good things. So focus on the good things. Seek out the association of the good. Be like a honey bee. Just look for the good devotees. Look for the good association. Look for all that. And all the devotees who are struggling, if you can lift yourself up, then you can help to bring them up also. That's the point. Is that okay?
When you said that Krishna is saying, you don't have to think about me. Another thing is when you ask for cooperation. What is it, cooperation?
Cooperation means that when you bring the offering to the altar, you don't eat it before you offer it to Krishna. Cooperation means when you bring the offering to the altar, you don't think of eating it before you offer it to Krishna. That's what Krishna's asking for. That's all he's asking for. Just offer it to me first. That's all he's asking. He's not saying, you know, you won't get anything, right? I'm going to eat puris and curd sabji, you're going to eat mashed potato. You know, he's not that kind of a person. Krishna will give you everything that he has, but you have to give it to him first. That's all he's saying. That's cooperation. That's all he's asking. Patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam, yomi, bhakcha, priyachchati. Offer it to me with love. Don't offer it to me like, you know, gee, you know, I hope Krishna's fast today because, you know, this curd sabji looks really good and I hope he's not too hungry so he leaves some for me and like that. That's not bhakti.
I mean, that's actually initiated devotees. What about the devotees who are not initiated?
What are you talking about?
I mean,
what's the difference between an initiated devotee and a non-initiated devotee? Nothing. There's no difference, right? It's not that when you become initiated, suddenly you become Paramahamsa. I tell you, man, it all starts when you get initiated. Don't think it's all over when you get initiated. That's when it starts. Don't think the initiated devotees are the elevated ones. That's when the struggle begins. That's when the tests begin. There's no difference between initiated devotee and a non-initiated devotee. Krishna accepts the service of the non-initiated devotee and the initiated devotee exactly the same. But you must take initiation. That's the instruction of Rupa Goswami. That's his first instruction. Guru Padashraya, you must take initiation. Because if you don't have a guru, it'll be very difficult for you to go back to Godhead. But there's no difference. It's like if a boy and a boy and a girl are attached to each other, right? Now, when they get married, right, then the attachment becomes, how do you say it?
Certified.
Yeah, it becomes certified. Right? Now, this is a marriage, right? That. But before they're married, they're just as attached to each other. Right? The marriage is the certification of the attachment. So we should be so attached to Krishna before we get initiated. It's not that, oh, when I get initiated, then I'll get serious. We should be dedicated. We should be sold out to Krishna already. We're just waiting to get initiated. That's all. It's like when you love someone, okay, I want to marry you. Yeah, I'm waiting to get married. Like that. But it's not that you don't love them beforehand. So you can't say initiated, non-initiated. You can't say like that. Initiation means it is the formality. But what's in the heart must already be there. That's the point. Any other points?
Lord Krishna says surrender. But we feel sometimes we are very elevated, waxing and waning. So what is the cause of that? Sometimes we feel very surrendered, sometimes we don't feel so.
It's caused by anattas. It means within the heart there's many impure things. So by doing devotional service, gradually those pure things go away. When you cook the milk in India, when you cook the milk, sometimes the straw comes up while you're cooking. So what they do, they scoop it off and then they throw it away. So when we're doing devotional service, impure things come up. So when it comes up, then you take it and you throw it aside, then you keep going. And then the next day it comes up again. I think so.
Because of our being an example of ourselves, how can we encourage other devotees to always be a good example for others?
How can we encourage other devotees to be a good example for others?
Yeah.
Then you have to, like you said, the first point is you have to set the example yourself. Yeah. See, if you ask someone to do something, just like when you're a more senior devotee, the junior devotees will come to you for guidance and instruction, right? But not everyone will have faith in everyone. It's not everyone has faith in every senior devotee. Some will have faith in a particular senior devotee, some will have more faith in other senior devotees. So I know for myself, those devotees who listen to me, then I give them instructions. Right? But those devotees who don't listen to me, then I don't give them instructions, because what's the point? Right? So the more that you become humble and the more you become a good servant yourself, the more other devotees will become inspired by you. Right? So you have to set the example. Right? And then if devotees become inspired, right, by your example, then they will listen to you and then you can give them directions how to be a good servant. Does that help?
So on the same point that I wrote earlier, I take what you say as given. I have I don't contest it at all, but I also believe that this is the best organisation to expand the entire world and have them join it and accept it more and more, so that's not the issue. But in the service of the organisation, I come from outside, I'm an old woman, I'm not young. So I know what happens in organisations out there around management and change in these areas of all. And the handling of transformation. And my question and thinking is, how does one take the lessons from the strategies and then because we are best positioned in a way to augment, because we engage in training of personal transformation and fitness with organization transformation. The two can be done, and then you could have a powerhouse transformation.
Yeah.
The change starts from the individual. But when the individual reaches a position of authority and they've been transformed, how do you then say that the organization so that you get more? Change going to scale on the organization.
You know, ISKCON has two important components. One is the missionary side of our movement, and the other is the educational side of our movement. So in the 70s, in the 80s, then even going into the 90s, but the missionary side was stressed, but the educational side was not developed so much. Like Prabhupada spoke in 1968 or 69 about having a Bhakti Shastri course. We didn't start a Bhakti Shastri course until 1989, 20 years after Prabhupada instructed that we should do that in the movement. It took 20 years to even start it with that. So it means that in the past in ISKCON, the missionary side has been very much given emphasis, but the educational side is not. So the more we develop the educational side, then the two will augment each other. Right? If we train the devotees properly, and then teach them how to be missionaries, how to preach, then the movement will flourish. So it's gradual. So ISKCON's only 40...
In that, I want to say to add the organization. Running organizations, managing people in the world.
Yeah, so all that training has to take place. So ISKCON's 40 years old. Christianity is 2,000 years old. So the fact that they've got themselves together, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons, they're extremely organized. You know, maybe it'll take us another 1,960 years to get it together. I hope not. I hope it happens quicker than that. But ISKCON's just growing, that's all. It'll get itself together. It's already getting itself together. Like you said, you wouldn't be in any other organization. I know myself, I wouldn't be in any other organization. Even with all the faults and all the defects, I still wouldn't be in any other organisation. If the ship goes down, I'll go down with the ship. That should be our mood. You know, if the ship goes down, let's all go down with the ship. We're not going to jump off the ship. That's our mood.
You mean that you can say the problem with ourselves is the stiffness of our heart, that we don't have enough love for or softness to have full conviction on Krishna. So how does this stiffness, as you said, is we try to protect ourselves and not have the dependency of anyone, even Krishna. So how this disease is
taken away,
cured, and does it just in one lifetime, or do we have to take many births to get that stage?
No, it's up to you. It's up to you how long it will take. Like that. Just like how long does it take for you to be nice to a devotee? That's up to you. All right? If you want to go for one more month not talking to some devotee who you're not talking to, then that could be, or it could be finished today. All right? But the point is that to overcome this hardness in the heart, that overcomes by service. Right? You have to do humble service to devotees. Rupa Goswami says there's six services. You offer them prasad, you accept the prasad. Right? You reveal the mind, you hear from them confidentially, right, in a trusted way, and you give them some gift, and you receive some gift. Mm-hmm. So if you do that, the heart becomes very soft. So that's what we need to do. Serve the other devotees. If you serve the devotees, everything will become very nice. Okay, we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Let's go see some of the
Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.